Welcome to This Song, the podcast that asks artists about songs that transformed them or changed them in some way. And we're not crazy strict around here, like we only talk about individual songs, because sometimes an artist can open up your world, or an entire catalog of a band can free you up to see the world in a new way. And those experiences, be they about a song or an artist or a band or a record, well, those experiences are what we love to talk about. I'm your host, Elizabeth McQueen, and as you have heard in previous episodes, I love the full band interview, and I'm in luck because in this episode, we'll be talking to the members of two bands, one small and one large. We'll be talking to Sylvanesso and Sip Sip. Sylvanesso is a small band, maybe the smallest incarnation of what you can call a band. They are a band of two. Sip Sip, on the other hand, is a band out of Austin that has 18 members. You heard me right. 18 members. Taylor Wallace interviewed them, and she'll be helping me introduce them a little later. And obviously, we couldn't talk to all 18 members, but we did talk to three of them. And in both cases, both small and large, hearing the music that the individual members are into gives you a good perspective about what the band is all about. First off, Sylvanesso, like I said, they are a band of two. Amelia Meath and Nick Sanborn, he's an electronic music producer, she's a singer and a songwriter, and they make this great electro, pop, dance, folk. I'm not sure there is a genre to describe them. Let's just say they transcend genre distinctions. They played the Austin City Limits Music Festival, and they were amazing, by the way. I mean, Amelia Meath sings so great and dances, and Nick Sanborn, I didn't know what to expect from someone who's essentially like triggering samples from a computer, but he owns it. It was just really fun to watch them. But I digress. They played Austin City Limits Music Festival, and they sat down with me to tell me about a band that they both love. And this was a first for me. I'm used to talking to like one person at a time, but they collectively love this band. They bonded around their love for this band, and they both wanted to talk about this band at the same time, and it ended up being great. So here they are, Sylvanesso.
We're going to start just talking about Soul Coughing, but there's a Soul Coughing song.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay? Great. Yeah, go for it. So, a Soul Coughing song?
A Soul Coughing song.
Called Maybe I'll Come Down.
Maybe I'll come down. Maybe I'll come down. Maybe I'll come down. Dumb.
Was it a song that you guys discovered like separately before you had met? And
yes.
Then when you got together, you were bonded over your love of this
Soul Coughing in general.
Soul Coughing in general, and the band, the three people who created Soul Coughing. Four?
Yeah.
Which ones? Oh yes, four. People who comprise Soul Coughing each individually.
Now who are the Soul Coughing guys? It was
Mike Doty and
Sebastian Steinberg. I think the drummer's name is Yuval Gabay,
mm-hmm.
I think. And
mm-hmm.
then Mark DeGlee Anthony is the...
Okay.
You're good.
I was working record stores for years and years and years as a high school student.
And Mark DeGlee Anthony was the dude, the
sampler
guy.
Who I'm still to this day obsessed with.
Yeah, he's had mind-blowing ideas about samples.
She's on Loretta's side. She's in a better state. She feels a better fire. But when I dreamed a great parade, shooting all the guns in Brooklyn, the man
first played it, he was the first guy I saw use a sampler on stage. I saw them when I was I saw them open up for They Might Be Giants in Madison, Wisconsin.
And how old were you at the time?
It was when they put out John Henry, so I must have been... See, I remember all the guys' names, but I can't remember what year. It must have been like 95...
Yeah.
13, maybe?
13, okay. So this is around the time...
Mid-90s sometime?
Yeah.
Was it around the time when you were... Because I feel like 13 is the time when people start to define, like, pick their own music and like start defining themselves through music, as opposed to hearing things on the radio or whatever your parents play.
Yeah, it was deep in that phase for me, and I didn't like them at all when I saw them.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
You were there for They Might Be Giants.
100%. Oh, yeah.
Who can hear in the alley by the light switch? Who watches over you? Make a little birdhouse in your soul, not to put too fine a point on it. Say I'm the only bee in your bonnet. Make a little birdhouse in your soul.
No, they had just put out Ruby Vroom, and I didn't know who they were, and it was my first time seeing them. They Might Be Giants, who I still am so into.
And were you? Well, yeah. I mean, They Might Be Giants.
Yeah.
But Mark Degley Anthony played a desktop computer. He had this like crazy
sampler big desktop
rig.
Computer.
Yeah, that's how I remember it. I mean, okay. I might be misremembering this, but I remember a giant screen, like an old cathode ray tube screen, like the old.
Like a TV screen.
The old monitor, like a big monitor. Yeah, uh-huh. And he had this huge rack because samplers were, you know, giant Akai rack things back then.
Oh.
You know, this is like.
So this
didn't,
is 90...
I didn't see an NPC on stage.
It was my first time
being like, oh, this is like.
Did you know?
This is a dinosaur he's bringing on stage. And he played it like a jazz organ. It was like this pure expression of something that. To me, it seemed like it must take so much pre-planning, but he just played it in this, like, emotional, crazy, like, whirling dervish kind of way. It's so cool.
Was it attached to a keyboard?
There was a keyboard attached,
okay.
Yeah.
But you didn't like it when you first saw it?
No. Well, I warmed to them over the course of the set.
Okay, so if you were like, boo, I want to see They Might Be Giants. Who is this opening act?
Yeah, well, Have you listened to Soul Coughing?
I've heard some Soul Coughing.
Okay.
I've never gone deep into the catalog, but like...
Should go deep.
Okay.
Yeah, and they're such a specific band that I think I just wasn't ready for that at that time. Especially being a kid and super hyped to see The Happy Giants. I was just not ready. You know?
Yeah, no, it's oddly theatrical. Like, all the songs are theatrical.
And he like kind of raps... You know, and
yeah, or it's like super percussive, and
it's
the way
so
like,
90s. It's
yeah,
so
and the
awesomely
lyric
90s.
Writing is both awesome and like really unfortunate at different points, but
it works.
But the performance saves everything.
Now, did you see them live too around that same time?
I didn't. I totally missed them. I only discovered them when I was in life drawing class in high school, and my cool, cool, cool art teacher Todd Bartel showed me Soul Coughing.
Ah, did
so
he...
that was in like 2003. Was when I heard Soul Coughing.
Okay. So did he like by that time? Was it a video like where he showed you Soul Coughing, or did he play it for you and you were
no,
like,
yeah,
oh,
no, yeah, we would listen to different music while we drew the models.
And. So you had missed it in the 90s, and you come about around to it in the 2000s.
Yeah.
And what was it like for you to hear it? Because, like, was it a kind of a mind-bender or expander, or was it more like, I like this, this is nice?
It was a mind-bender and expander in that they have such a specific sound, and I hadn't heard a band with such a specific thesis statement built into every song that they... were writing and making.
Was it that meld that they brought? Like, so it's a little bit hip-hop, it's a little bit rock and roll, we use, like,
jazz.
Electronic...
It's a lot of jazz.
A lot of jazz.
Yeah, a lot of jazz. Yeah, so it's just really exciting to hear. And, like, it was an uncool band that no one had heard of.
Right.
Anymore in my high school. Like, no one cared, and that was, like, my favorite thing, was to love bands that no one cared for at that time.
Kind of
that's how we,
high
yeah, that's,
classic
like,
high
that's
school.
How we define ourselves
yeah,
exactly. as a yeah, certain kind
yeah,
of person.
This
defines
is my
himself.
Band.
in circles, walk around in circles, walk around in circles, walk around in. Don't need to walk around in circles, walk around in circles, walk around in circles, walk around in.
And then you guys met, like, how many years after that?
Well, so I saw them in the mid-90s, and we met in 2010. So probably 15 years later.
So 15 years later, when was that one of the things, like, when you started talking about
No,
music?
We figured that,
like,
out way after.
We figured that out way after. Yeah. Or, like, we first figured out that we both liked They Might Be Giants, which was a huge, I mean, you know, how often?
I think I
put it on.
Yeah,
or
and
we
I was like,
put it on in
how
the car,
are
and we were both
playing?
Like, ah!
Yeah.
You know?
It's like, did you just put on El Oso? Which is a record that I love that I didn't.
Yeah.
Bust off the thought before it's just became insistent. But I rubbed it out along the spot where it were missing.
Were you playing music at the time when you saw them do the
same? Yes.
Okay. Were you into electronic music at all? Or would that
Not yet.
Come
No, that
later?
Came... I didn't get into electronic music really until I was in high school. I started working at this record store, and somebody there played... What was it even first? It was a couple of records right at the same time. So it was like a bunch of stuff that this label Warp put out. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, Boards of Canada... Autechre's EP7. And right after that was this record by a guy named Preview 73 called Vocal Studies in Uprock Narratives. Those all and like the earlier Aphex Twin stuff, like those kind of showed up when I was like 15, and this was like 2 or 3 years later.
Right on. So did you kind of hearken back to that, seeing Soul Coughing, like, oh, that's what that was like?
To me, I hadn't even associated it with electronic music. It was just this totally different thing. You know, it was this, I had never seen somebody do sampling in a non-hip-hop context that I thought wasn't terrible.
Yeah.
And he was doing it this way that felt completely uniquely him, you know? It's and listening to those records now, like, who samples like that now? Like, go listen to
no
those records. And
I will.
And
I now
it's
totally
on every
want
one
to
of them.
Yeah.
His concept of, like, he, like, actually thinks about timing in samples in a different way. He doesn't think about it as in duration,
uh-huh.
But he thinks about it as, like, he's got one of those brains that sees sound in 3D.
Yeah,
you know, that's what you can envision,
right,
and you see like every peak,
like,
of each sample is like delicately zhuzhed into like between all the sounds. It's incredible.
Okay, in the way that you would insert like play an instrument, like insert sound that way.
Yeah,
okay.
And they're lawless. You know, it's so left. The minute you start being like paying attention to it as a thing, it's like a lawless approach to putting samples in a song. Like, it makes no sense.
And it's a grind, grind, it's a grind, it's a grind, grind, it's a grind, grind, it's a grind, it's a grind, grind, it's a grind, grind, it's a grind, it's a grind, grind, it's a grind, grind, it's a grind, grind. Get onto the bus, that's gonna take you back to...
So you had already started making music together before you discovered your shared love of this band. But I can't imagine that if this band like is kind of inside of you both in this really deep way that it doesn't somehow make its way into what Sylvanesso does. I mean, do you try to be that lawless? Do you try to like push yourself in those ways? Like,
yeah, I think we do. I don't think we necessarily say like, let's do that soul coughing thing.
I think
more than anything, he listening to what he does expands your idea of what you can do with found sound.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And especially because he, while making it feel just like him, also lets a piece of sound just be what it is for long stretches of time. And there's like a freedom and a jumping off a cliff feeling with that. Like normally you're cutting these tiny little snippets or drum hits or, you know, individual
little
hits.
Because it can get so very precise. It can get so very like
exactly.
And there's a really wonderful thing that I feel like I learned from him and kind of from Joe Westerlund, which is like just letting a longer piece of audio just do what it's gonna do and have happy accidents fall where they will. And just letting it happen. I think that's a big thing I feel like I've done.
You don't use words like that. St. Louis is listening. You don't use words like that. St. Louis is listening. Let me get up on it. Let me get up on it. Let me get up.
Anything
on
lyrically? Because you did mention, like, lyrically that sometimes it's brilliant and sometimes it's
not necessarily
unfortunate, but like.
Yeah, not necessarily anything lyrically. The delivery is really incredible. And
really
the way,
rhythmic.
Like, it's, yeah, essentially it's beat poetry, but. Luckily, because he never says that it's beat poetry, you never touch it. Yeah.
Like if he had ever come out and said it, it would have just ruined it.
No.
Check out
no,
our new
no,
slam
no,
poetry
no, no,
record.
No,
yeah.
No.
Which was such a 90s thing. Like,
oh, yeah.
That
super
was
duper.
When that was all happening.
Dum 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 ba did da dum dum ba did da dum 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 ba did da dum.
You guys, thank you so much. That was really
no,
thank
great.
You.
Right on.
Yeah, that was so great.
That was
time.
Awesome. Thank
yeah.
you. Yeah.
True. It's a dance we know the moves. The bow, the dip, the woo. Though the words are true, the state is all new.
And below me you can hear Coffee by Sylvanesso, and that idea, the idea of letting the sample be what it is. Once I heard that and had it in my mind, I could hear it all over Sylvanesso's music and all over Soul Coughing's music, which, like I said in the interview, I wasn't terribly familiar with, like, their deep catalog. I'd never dug into it before. But I'm glad they hipped me to Soul Coughing's music, because it really is, like, insane, the use of samples in that band, the kind of lawlessness. Yeah, like they said, it's lawless, and we could all use much more musical lawlessness in our lives. At least I can.
Mom's gone. Do you love me? Blazing summer.
And now I want to welcome Taylor Wallace to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here. Hello.
Hi, how's it going?
All right. How are you?
I'm good. Taylor interviewed Sip Sip when they came into Studio 1A to play an after hours show, because that's the kind of radio station we are here at KUTX. We
after throw, hours shows with beer.
Yes. After hours shows with beer in Studio 1A. And of course, I didn't make it because I have two young kids and I'm lame. I go to bed at 8 o'clock. That's the stage of life I'm in. But Taylor, she's young. She parties. And she was here to interview some of the band. You pulled some members into the studio. And is it true that Sip Sip has 18 members?
18 members. I think depending on who you listen to and what you read, you will hear all different numbers. I've heard everything from 13 to 18, 17, all anything basically that's over a dozen and under 24. I've heard that number attached to them. So that was my first objective, was to find out how many members are in the band. And there are 18 stateside.
18 members.
I think it's potential for 21, but those other members are out of the country currently.
Wow. That's a lot of members. And they call themselves like the ultimate party band,
Austin's
right?
Ultimate party band.
Yes. And
a lot of those 18 members are horn players. Right?
Yes, uh-huh. And, you know, and even the some of the ones who don't play horns in Sip Sip still play horns otherwise.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's crazy, because we've never had any horn players. And you got to interview, like, three of them, right?
I got to interview three of them somehow.
We have Jack Anderson, and he plays trumpet.
Yes.
And then...
there's Isaac Winburn, who plays the alto sax, and then Andrew Fontenot playing tenor sax.
Okay, okay. He's not a bass player?
He is a bass player, but this is the thing. He's a bass player, but he also plays the sax. And just like Isaac plays the sax and the drums.
Excellent.
Well, and other things as well, I'm sure.
Well, I really liked the horn perspective because, again, I'm not a horn player, so mm-hmm. I never... think about horns very much, but it was really cool to sit down and hear what they had to say. So, without further ado, Sip Sip.
I don't know what it was. I guess I, you know, still to this day watch a lot of movies. So I was watching a lot of movies, and I was really getting into movie soundtracks at the time.
Okay.
And one of the first soundtracks I ever had was Pulp Fiction.
Okay.
And on Pulp Fiction, the track right after Miserlou by Dick Dale is Jungle Boogie by Kool and the Gang. Get down, get down, get down, get down. And I don't know what it was about that song, but it was just like from the beginning to the end. I mean, that song's like what, like 2.5 minutes or whatever, but I remember just like dancing in my room, just like really, really loving the, you know, ba ba da ba da ba 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 ba. And it was just so cool to me, and you know, I'd never really like listened to funk before, but it was really, really neat to just hear this instrument that, you know, I wasn't very good at, but heard what it could do.
Okay.
And all these like these crazy like sounds, and then around the same time still getting like soundtracks. And by the way, the whole reason I had access to these was at the public library. And what I got right after that, which was also at the public library, was the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack.
Oh no.
And oh man, I think that was the one that also had a Kool and the Gang song. So there was Jungle Boogie, Kool and the Gang on Pulp Fiction soundtrack, but then Saturday Night Fever, Open Sesame by Kool and the Gang.
Open Sesame!
And that was another one where it's just like 3 minutes, but the whole time. Ba 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 ba. Like really, really cool funky horn lines and like just soaring trumpets just going up.
Shazam!
So I was listening to Kool and Gang and other funk groups like that, and you know, Saturday Night Fever soundtrack and everything, and
it like reawakened your love for the trumpet, or it guided your love, or
I would say it guided it, because I mean, I did enjoy playing like the kind of smoother, slower, jazzy stuff, but I also really, really like playing the high energy funk stuff. And another thing about like the whole funk genre, especially those songs, Jungle Boogie and Open Sesame, which were the two Kool and the Gang songs that I ever heard. There's a lot of like falsetto upper register playing, and that kind of sparked my love of the higher register.
Get down, 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 get down,
and just how impactful and punchy a trumpet could be. I mean, it definitely guided my taste in music, because I would want to play trumpet like on Earth, Wind, and Fire, or Kool and the Gang, or Chicago, or whatever.
think that the song has to be, for me, just Isn't She Lovely by Stevie Wonder.
That's a great song.
That's the one that got me.
So what's the story behind that song?
So for saxophone, I think I took lessons later on in high school from this guy, Joe Morales, who's an amazing saxophone player in Austin. Mm-hmm. And we didn't do lessons like, learn this, let's play this. We like, every day we'd go in and we'd either create a track or grab a backing track from a song and then just record and play solos and like learn chords. And then at the end of the lesson, we'd be done. And that's what we'd have. So we'd make a recording mm-hmm. of that song. So we'd
How long were your lessons?
An hour.
An hour at a time to just create this entire
sound.
Yeah,
and we did that,
cool.
And it was super cool. And so we played Isn't She Lovely. Played Ribbon in the Sky.
Oh, so long for this night, I prayed that a star would guide you my way to share with me this special day. Well, ribbons in the sky for our love.
Golden Lady.
And Golden Lady, Golden Lady, I'd like to go there. Golden Lady, Golden Lady, I'd like to go there.
Some other like Stevie Wonder songs, and I played a lot with him in like maybe a more like gospel church kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that like made my heart go crazy, because like I was playing saxophone and you're getting to sing, but it's not my voice, it's like through this instrument and like playing
those songs.
No,
I totally understand. I played tenor sax for 8 years.
Yeah, and so getting to like sing out and like breathe with that is like how I learned to love saxophone. It's like to find that tone, like screw the notes,
right?
You know, all of it, just like find the tone and like put it out. And so I feel like got that feeling from him, and through those songs, Isn't She Lovely, One, Ribbon in the Sky,
That's
Golden
cool.
Lady. But
That's...
Stevie Wonder, that just that feeling, that immediate and like infinite happiness and like joy you put out. And that's, I think, why I continue to play saxophone and why I started was that.
Get up. Ace is back in the deck, him and he's gonna rap to his death. Hope he get better than half of the rest. Like, oh, y'all's, I'm bad for the breath. Putting whack MCs back to the test of the party throws, and I'm acting a mess. But good, breeze, like a good, breeze, like a good, breeze, outside chilling.
So, Andrew, what song was the spark that ignited the fire in you becoming a musician?
All right, so a little bit of background. I started playing music with my dad when I was 10 years old. He had a band. And he needed a bassist. And so I had already been kind of thinking about playing bass, and he was like kind of pushing me in that direction so mm-hmm. I could play bass in his band. And I was trying to think of a song to like start learning it. And then it was right around the time that song Schism came out by Tool. And it's just like the rowdiest, most awesome bass line.
Right.
And I sat with my dad for like probably 20, 30 minutes in uh-huh. my room trying to figure out what he was doing, like how it was played. And we could never figure out how it was played. But yeah, interestingly enough, Tool. I was just real at the time. Again, I was essentially learning bass to play in like a singer-songwriter group.
Mm-hmm.
But I always really, really was like into like pop punk and metal. And interestingly enough, that song is about as far as I got into Tool. Like, I never...
Right.
You know, like, it's so interesting that that's the song that got really... legitimately got me into music, and then I never followed up on any of the...
You never went to Hot Topic to buy a t-shirt.
Yeah, the song's tight. But I just, it was a song that it was, I'd never heard a bass played like that before, that specific intro. And now I listen to a lot of Tool, and it's just basically that bassist style. Like, he does that sort of thing a lot, kind of that hammer-on weird thing.
There was a time that the pieces fit, but I
But it was just like, I've always, when I try to learn an instrument or learn anything musically, I basically try to focus on a song, and specifically a song that's like a little bit out of my talent range, which is interesting because I had no talent because I just started playing.
So you're always giving yourself a challenge, feeding yourself a challenge.
I'm not real good at improvising new music or writing parts, so I try to focus on learning a song that's a little bit out of my depth.
And below me, you're hearing Continental Breakfast, and there it is, that funk, those punchy horns. And Taylor, you told me that Jack Anderson actually wrote one of the horn lines in the beginning of that song, right?
Yes, I think I would call it the third run, the third horn line that you kind of hear in the song. And yeah, that's what he told me.
Excellent. And Sip Sip has a record out, so if people want to hear their music, they can get their record. It's called...
Party Record.
Appropriately, for the ultimate
exactly.
party band.
It's got two crossed 40s on the cover.
And if you want to see Sip Sip, they are going to be at the Empire Control Room on New Year's Eve, right?
Yes, they'll be playing with Mother Falcon, so about half of their members are also Mother Falcon. Mother Falcon just got off of a huge nationwide tour, so now they're back. They're coming back for the second inception of the Mother Sip Connection.
Excellent. That sounds like a lot of fun. I might have to get my tickets.
Oh, and they've got a new record coming out next year.
So thank you so much for coming in, Taylor, and thanks for doing those interviews.
Thank you.
And that's it. We have come to the end of another episode of This Song. This Song is a production of KUTX 98.9. It was produced and edited by myself, Elizabeth McQueen, David Sanger, and Taylor Wallace. Hey, yay, Taylor! The interviews were recorded by Jake Perlman and Taylor Wallace. Thanks to Peter Babb for everything he does for KUTX and the podcast. And our theme song? Oh yeah, it's Mahout by Austin's own Hardproof Afrobeat. You can email us at thissong@kutx.org or tweet us at thissongkutx. You can subscribe to This Song along with the other KUTX podcasts, liner notes, Song of the Day, and Austin Music Minute on iTunes, or follow us on Stitcher. And yes, I know, we know you're busy, but if you have a moment, we'd love a rating or a review on iTunes. Well, thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you later.